is where the associations with fame came from. To be in the limelight was to be front and center on the brightest part of the stage. This moment of science comes from Indiana University. For a moment of science, I'm Yael Cassander.
WILL programs are made possible by Bevere Cafe. Bevere Cafe serves breakfast and lunch from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday through Friday, and an after hour till 3 p.m. featuring soups, sandwiches, salads, ice cream, and specialty coffees. Bevere offers Wi-Fi. Daily menus are available online at bevercafe.illinois.edu.
Briefly in sports today, the Chicago Bulls have won 9 of their last 12 at the United Center heading into tonight's game against Orlando. They'll try to get above the 500 mark with a win over the Magic, who lead the NBA's Southeast Division and are in second place in the Eastern Conference standings. And Northwestern's men's basketball program goes for its 17th win tonight in a Big Ten game at Iowa. The Wildcats, who were briefly in the AP top 25 earlier in the season, could tie a school record for regular season victories tonight. That's sports.
We had the opportunity to bring some inner city youth out to the park and give them an opportunity to see things that the general public probably won't get to do in the park, but also what the general public can do. Kids that had never been out in a canoe or shot a gun or held a geese. It was a hands-on experience from them, and they went from being scared to being active participants.
I would say it made me look at what I was doing, like when I would just throw a chip bag out the car or a piece of gum to the grass, what it could do to the animals if they were to get a hold to it and how it could affect their lives.
WILL provided the overall management of the whole program. They were the push behind everybody. My name is John Hott, and I'm the site superintendent of Kickapoo State Park, and WILL is my source for great community partnership.
It's 2:42. Everyone thought wild jaguars were long gone in the U.S. until 14 years ago when a rancher in Arizona spotted one. That lone jaguar became a symbol of hope, and more recently, with its death, a symbol of controversy. Now the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has been ordered to put together a plan to bring the hemisphere's largest cat back to the Southwest. NPR's Ted Robbins reports.
No one knows if there are any jaguars left in the southwest U.S. They are stealthy and reclusive, so the only place you and I are likely to see the powerful cat is in a zoo.
What are they getting?
This is horse meat and beef heart, and they get this twice a day, and they also get additional meat midday, like a midday snack. So,
zookeeper Deborah Henley feeds sister jaguars Nikita and Simone at Tucson's Reed Park Zoo. These jaguars are dark, almost black. Others are tan with black spots. Nikita and Simone were born in captivity. They wouldn't survive in the wild. But at least one jaguar, nicknamed Macho B, was living along the border in southern Arizona until last year. That's when he was captured in a leg-hold snare by a team from the Arizona Game and Fish Department. At the time, Bill Van Pelt told reporters his team was trying to capture mountain lions and bears, not jaguars.
We did not set out to capture this animal. This was an incidental capture.
Macho B was tranquilized, fitted with a radio collar, and released. 12 days later, the elderly jaguar was recaptured, sick with kidney failure. Van Pelt said Macho B had to be euthanized.
And while the loss of the jaguar is very disappointing, both from an emotional and a scientific level.
Its capture may also have been illegal. A recent congressional investigation concluded it wasn't incidental at all, but a bungled intentional operation. The Center for Biological Diversity was one of the conservation groups which pushed for that investigation. The center was also responsible for getting the jaguar on the endangered species list, and most recently, successfully suing the government to create a recovery plan for the species. Kieran Suckling is its executive director.
We have a moral responsibility to recover a species that we as a nation drove out of America by shooting and gassing and snaring every last animal.
But Alan Rabinowitz says there is no evidence that a large population of jaguar ever existed in the U.S. Rabinowitz is a jaguar biologist who helped establish the world's first jaguar sanctuary in Belize. An individual jaguar can cover 30 miles a day, so Rabinowitz says Macho B was an anomaly, roaming in and out of the country. Jaguars exist by the thousands from Mexico down to South America, but their numbers are declining. So Rabinowitz says governments and conservationists should work to save them south of the border.
Trying to recover an animal that has not occurred in the United States, at least in historic times, I can't see where that makes a lot of sense.
The Fish and Wildlife Service is studying what land would be necessary for jaguar survival, called critical habitat. Then it will draw up a recovery plan for the animal. After that, it'll be time to decide if it makes sense to actually bring jaguars into the United States. Ted Robbins, NPR News, Tucson.
For those who attended public school growing up, you probably have vivid memories of the lunches the school served. For most, these would not be fond memories. Vivid, yes. Fond, no. School lunches seem to be something students tolerate rather than enjoy. There is one Illinois school teacher who's trying to bring attention to what she feels is lacking in school lunches. Her goal for 2010 is to eat the same lunches offered to students every day and then blog about it at her site, fedupwithschoollunch.blogspot.com, a blog which in the short time it's been around has gathered a following. Now, doing this project is not without risks. Our blogging teacher goes only by the name of Mrs. Q for fear that she could lose her job if her identity was known. Sidetrack host Jason Croft talked with Mrs. Q recently and asked her how her project was going.
Just as far as the project itself, without going into the web response, it's going fine. I mean, I'm eating a lunch and, you know, I just get through my day. It's one of those things. It's just now it's on my list of things to do in the day.
Now, it's been a long time since I've been in school, but some of those things take me back, those little fruit cups and the little pizzas and everything. And the visuals of this, you know, sometimes they don't look that appetizing.
Yeah.
I mean, but then again, you know, you go through in detail on every piece that is there on that lunch tray.
Yeah.
And some are better than others, right?
Yeah, some are much better than others. Some are really, really bad. And I mean, sometimes it's the quality, sometimes it's the taste, sometimes it's the size or portion size that they give that I think is small. Like, there have been times where I thought, wow, that was a really small lunch. And I just thought, you know, because there are, well, in my school, there are small and big school, students. So I think about the little guys, that's probably enough. But for the bigger kids, you know, is that going to fill them up for the day? And are they going to be able to, you know, get through their afternoon on that? You know, sometimes it makes me wonder.
So of the lunches that you've had so far, what would you say are the best, both, I guess, in taste and what you would feel would be nutritional value, although you're not a dietitian?
I don't have a nutrition background
but,
at all.
And, you know, just sort of as a parent, you know, what you would want to feed your child and what is the best that you've had so far and what do you think is the worst that you've had so far?
I think the best was the Tex-Mex meal, which was like taco meat over rice. That was the main entree, and then the beans, and then some tortilla chips. So that was pretty good. Probably definitely my favorite. And then another one was some of the spaghetti hasn't been too bad. So that was really good. I think the worst are, well, for me personally, the pizza and the hot dogs. Probably the hot dogs are the worst. And not to say that, you know, hot dogs are high in quality, but, I mean, this doesn't taste like what I expect. I want, if I were to choose a hot dog to eat, it wouldn't be my choice.
Now, what prompted you to start this daily diary of school lunches?
You know, I can't even really think of one exact thing that just made me think of this. I've been working there for a few years, and you know, over the years, I've noticed what they are eating, but I don't know. I more recently became a parent, and you know, here's a cafeteria in my workplace. They cook, or while they have food there, I thought I'm gonna just give it a shot, and I'm gonna blog about it. And I didn't realize how timely this topic is because you know, President Obama has been talking about school lunches, and he wants to increase funding to school lunches. And I think that's a really terrific thing. So it's very timely, and it's just a really coincidence that it turned out to be, you know, right at the right time to be doing this.
And, of course, you wouldn't be doing this unless you saw that there was a problem. At least there's something behind what you're doing.
Right. And that's the thing. I'm sort of walking a line in my blog, and that is that I believe there is a problem, but I don't want to directly criticize the administration too much, partially because they employ me, but you know, I know that they're doing the best they can given the federal money that they get for the school lunches, because the school lunch program is federal, and I don't know how much control each state has, but I don't want to come out and just, you know, with guns ablaze and say that this is terrible food. And I'm really leaving that up to my commentators, people who share those, you know, opinions on the blog. You know, I want to be the kind of person that's putting out the information as objectively as I can and leaving the other people to draw conclusions. But yes, I do believe there is a problem with school lunches, and I don't think that, I don't care how rich or poor you are, you shouldn't get this from your school at lunch.
There are better alternatives, in your opinion.
I believe that we can do better, and I don't know if I'm the person to decide, you know, what that is, but I'm just here showing you what I see every day.
Now, we are keeping you anonymous because in your blog, you actually fear for your job.
Yes.
And you kind of want to be a whistleblower, but then you're saying you don't want to be, because it seems like the administrators aren't really the bad guys here. So, I mean, where does the blame lie?
You know, I'm just naturally a very nervous person. So for me, this is pretty wild. But basically, I don't know. I believe that basically, like a lot of bad decisions in life, somebody made a decision, yeah, why don't we individually package meals for children and have them reheated on site and then feed them those meals. And then as years went on, let's shave off some dollars and cents here, and now we're left with this kind of program that isn't sustainable and it's not healthy. And I don't know who's benefiting from this. And all I know is that I think it's wrong, and I'd like to see some changes.
Let's talk about the reaction you've gotten about this blog. You have really tapped into something with this daily update of lunches.
Yeah.
Tell me about some of the comments and reaction you've gotten from people.
Well, I've been really, really shocked. To be perfectly honest, I thought maybe in a couple months I might get a few comments. But within 10 days, I got major, major blog activity and mentions on different foodie blogs. And I was absolutely blown away. I think that there's a couple reasons behind it. First of all, like I said, it's very timely with President Obama looking at reauthorizing the National Federal School Lunch Nutrition Program. They're going to do that later this year. So it's timely as far as current events. And then secondly, we are at a point in life where I think a lot of people are rethinking food in a major way. And nobody's really thought about, people think about their own lives, what they buy at the grocery store, and then they send their kids off to school and they just assume that the school is doing the very best it can to provide the child with quality food. And I know that on some level they really are doing the best they can with the money they have, especially in this economy. But when you have a look at the lunches, just objectively, here's what some kids ate today. And I'm not saying it's all kids. I'm just saying it's some kids, you know, some kids who ate this today and were expected to go back into class and focus on a teacher, learn, not fall asleep. I think that for some people it's just really resonating. And I think some of my favorite comments actually are people telling me about their experiences with school lunch. And some of them are really funny, you know, and they make me laugh. Other ones are sadder, where people say that, you know, they had bad lunches too, and or they had lunches that were better than that, and they thought their lunches were bad at the time, and how these lunches are stacking up against their personal experience. The reaction has been really fun. It's been just really, really rewarding. So that's great.
Well, if people want to follow your project here of documenting the lunches that you eat and the kids eat at your school, where can they go to?
They can go to my blog, which is fedupwithschoollunch.blogspot.com.
That was an Illinois teacher who wants only to be known as Mrs. Q. She's made it her project to eat the same school lunches offered to students and talk about it on her blog, which, as she said, can be found at fedupwithschoollunch.blogspot.com. She talked with Sidetrack host Jason Croft.
Earth and Sky.
Johannes Lehmann is a soil scientist at Cornell University. He's also an expert on biochar. That's what's created when biomass, things like leftover crops, manure, and yard waste, are heated and charred.
You make a resource out of your waste stream.
Charring is different from burning, Lehmann said. If something is charred, it retains its carbon rather than releasing it. That's why, he explained, charring can turn waste into a valuable resource for farmers.
One possible biochar system is, for instance, a poultry farmer that would otherwise not know where to put the poultry litter.
Lehmann went on to explain that fertilizer made from chicken manure is a source of water pollution, but if the manure were converted to biochar, he said, the charring process could create enough energy to heat the farmer's chicken coop, and the biochar itself could be used to enrich the farm's soil. Lehmann hopes more small farmers will use biochar to create a more sustainable and localized agricultural system.
To deal with the biomass locally, where you can take care of the waste, generate energy at the same time, and generate a product that will enhance soil health locally is a smart idea to do.
More interviews with scientists at our website. I'm Deborah Bird, Earth.